First of all, I would like to thank the organizers for the opportunity to be in a place which is warmer than Florida at this time of the year. I'm going to talk about singular or synonymically non-analytic corrections to the Fermi liquid behavior, and about some precursors of one-dimensional physics in high dimensions. This is a work done in a collaboration with my student Suchas at the University of Florida, our chairman, Leonid Glazman, and also Andy Millis joined us recently on some aspects of the physics in three dimensions. So, as most of us know, the main subleading corrections to the Fermi liquid forms of thermodynamic quantities are singular non-analytic functions of temperature, spatial scale at which probe the system. And probably the best known and relevant to the subject of this conference member of this family is a finite wave vector singularity in the static spin susceptibility, which seem to change the nature of the ferromagnetic phase transition, and is relevant to the issue which is going to discuss tomorrow, and was already discussed in Dietrich's talk, whether fermions can or cannot be integrated out. And my talk is not actually going to touch heavily on our quantum phase transitions. Actually, it will have very little to do with it. I will mostly be talking about how these are pesky singular terms arise within the Fermi liquid, something which Andy also mentioned today. And I have two messages, that although we live in high dimensions, and our Fermi liquid properties are determined by high dimensional scattering processes, these particular features, the non-analytic terms, arise from a special subset of scattering events, which are essentially one-dimensional in nature. And they can be viewed as a precursor of a one-dimensional physics in high dimensions. And the second message is that if you try to do a naive perturbation theory in interaction in 2D, it breaks down. And there is some perturbation theory brings your Fermi liquid back, so there is no really issue of a breakdown of Fermi liquid in 2D. However, in this presumed Fermi liquid theory, there will be still some features, such as a non-Lorentzian spectral function, which are non-perturbative and which originate also from this one-dimensional processes. So if you look at a system of interacting fermions at lowest energies, then to a first approximation, the Fermi liquid is just equivalent to Fermi gas with parameters changed by the interactions. C over T is a constant, spin susceptibility also approaches a constant value, and in a Fermi liquid, we simply have different values of this constant. But if we ask what happens at not so low energies, or technically speaking, if we go to the next order term in the temperature of the Fermi energy, and then in the Fermi gas, certainly we know everything. We can ask what's going on at arbitrary temperature. Then we'll see that our thermodynamics form regular series in even powers of the temperature of the wave vector. And in the Fermi liquid, at least in a canonical formulation of the Fermi liquid, we strictly speaking don't know what the answer is, because the canonical formulation of the Fermi liquid is an asymptotically low energy theory, which is only suited to deal with leading order terms. So then you kind of sacrifice the generality of the Fermi liquid description, and you go to a variety of microscopic models, which in some sense are perturbative, and then there is a plethora of results about next leading order terms, and what you find that the spin susceptibility and specific heat behaves non-analytically as a function of temperature or the wave vector. So in 3D, you get logs, which multiply the powers of T and Q, and that starts back, and that goes back to the times of Nelly Ashberg, that's 60s, paramagnets, et cetera, et cetera. More or less recently, it was realized that certainly the same physics also exists in 2D, and in 2D, the logs are converted into odd powers of temperature and the wave vector. And finally, if you go from 3D to 2D to 1D, then you see that you are left with logs where the one-dimensional physics is all what you have. And there are two issues here, as it was said earlier. Not only you have a non-analytic terms in the wave vector, which means that your gradient expansion is in the problem, but also the sign of this term tells you that the spin susceptibility is peaked at finite wave vector, and that implies a possibility of ordering at the finite scale rather than a uniform ordering. And it has also been shown recently that this nullity survives even if you put the system at the critical point. The functional form, let's say, of a mod Q term in the spin susceptibility changes to Q to 3/2, but it still has the wrong sign, so to speak, which points towards the either first order phase transition or inhomogeneous state. So this is just some historical example of how these singular terms are seen. In helium, you see a Darren term in the C over T ratio, which is fit into this T squared log T theorem. This is a Greg's talk from 84 preview. This is UPT3, and you see this this is specific heat over T squared plotted as log T. So this is this non-analytic behavior. 2D is not studied as well, but now people do do experiments on Manol layers of helium-3, they extract the R coefficient of the odd T term in C over T ratio, and this is the data from Sandra's group only over the last year. So at the first approximation, what we're talking about are small corrections. They're not going to break down the Fermi liquid. However, they are non-analytic, and because I'm coming from the mesoscopic background, what we learned in mesoscopics, one has to be very cautious about non-analytic terms, because sometimes they tell you some interesting physics which is going on. And also, if you look at the cousins of the singularities in thermodynamics, which are the non-analytic terms in transport properties of dirty or fermions, then we find that these cousins come from special set of trajectories. For example, the famous weak localization correction to the R conductivity comes from this famous time reversal path when fermions move in a loopwise way. And also the what is called Schuler-Aronoff correction to the R conductivity, although being a one-dimensional effect, comes from essentially one-dimensional backscattering from the Friedel oscillation. So it would be interesting to see if thermodynamics is also dominated by some special kind of scattering events. It is somewhat easier to think about the self-energy, so I will start with the self-energy. So if we have a Fermi liquid, we have the usual argument that we have two quasi particles with our energies around the Fermi energy in the window of width T. When we make these two our particles interact, the scattering rate goes as T squared, or if we do it at finite energy, as omega squared. It looks like we're having some expansion in even powers of the energy scale, which is not so. If we look at the high order terms, then in 3D it goes as mod omega cubed instead of omega 4. In 2D, actually, what we would call a correction already is larger than the Fermi liquid term. We have omega squared log omega. And in 1D, this wrong term is already omega, and that's where the Fermi liquid breaks down. And if you look at where different parts of this scattering rate come from, they come from distinct processes. So the regular Fermi liquid term, which gives you omega squared, it comes from processes where the momentum transfers are large. Then they're determined by some ultraviolet scale in the problem, which can be RKF, which can be the screening radius, and the energy transfers are small, they're of the order of the incoming energy. The non-analytic part of the self-energy comes from processes which are soft, in the sense that the momentum transfer is of order of the incoming energy, and if you go to low energy scale, that's small. Or they come from almost backscattering when the difference between the momentum transfer and to Kiev is also proportional to the frequency, and it is small. And it is easy to convince yourself, just doing the power counting, that these soft processes, which come from the Landau damping of the dynamical part of the polarization bubble, and the interaction time to transfer momentum Q, gives you non-analytic behavior of the self-energy in all dimensions, and it goes as omega 2 times omega d2 minus 2, and I just emphasize this d2 minus 2 to make sure that in d equal to 2, I get log. So now let's look at two typical trajectories. So let's say I have two quasi-particles, red and blue. So let's first say something about this scattering event here, which occurred at some other third quasi-particle. So this is an any angle scattering event, and that leads to a Fermi limit. Now we have dynamic forward scattering, for example, this event here marked by a star, where momentum transfer is small because two fermions did not really deflect from the original lines of motion. But this is not a one-dimensional event. This is forward scattering, but they started off at, let's say, 45 degrees to each other, and they left the interaction region at 45. And there are also three processes which are marked by these red stars, these Sirius stars, where there is some conspiracy between two fermions. So for example, in this process, two fermions conspire to enter into the region of interaction with almost parallel momenta, and they go out of this region with also almost parallel momenta. And in a proper 1D, this is a G4 event. Now there are also processes where fermions come to the interaction region with almost anti-parallel momenta, and this is G2. So this is, let's say, in 1D it would be a scattering of left on right fermions. And finally, there is a back scattering. So what's the role of these special processes? If we are in 3D, already this forward scattering of a non-one-dimensional type lead to the singularities in thermodynamics, and this is actually the origin of what we can call now old Paramagnon term. So if you know about Paramagnon term, that's where it comes from. In 2D, however, it doesn't play any role. What you have in 2D is only these are three one-dimensional processes, which are rare in the sense the statistical weight is small. However, that's what determines the non-analytic part of thermodynamics and single particle properties. And in 3D, you have our contribution both from this type of events and also from one-dimensional type of events. Okay, so now all reduces to three vertices. One is strict forward scattering, right on right, left on left. And it doesn't contribute to non-analytic behavior in thermodynamics. However, it does lead to a breakdown of the naive perturbation theory in a similar way it does in 1D. And the remaining features, if you do the proper resummation, is the change in the single particle properties, for example, in the petal function. Now, these two processes are the processes when the total momentum of the fermionic pair is equal to zero. And then you can have either forward scattering or back scattering. They do lead to non-analytic terms in thermodynamics. Okay. So how to see it? If I go back to thermodynamic potential, which is responsible for thermodynamics, and look at the small momentum transfer diagram. So you have two bubbles here, and one here. And then you have two fermions, as meant K and K, P and P. And if I look at what is the regular part of the thermodynamic potential, then momenta K and P are not correlated. K is totally detached from P. However, the non-analytic part comes from the dynamic part of the particle-hole bubble from Landau damping term omega over Q. And if you ask where it comes from, it actually comes from scattering, where K here is almost perpendicular to the incoming bosonic momentum. Likewise, you have the second bubble, and P inside this bubble is also perpendicular to the bosonic momentum. But then you have, in 2D, you have only two choices. Either then K and P are parallel, or they are anti-parallel. Now, parallel K and P do not contribute to thermodynamics because this is just forward scattering, which can, in some sense, be gauged away. What survives is the anti-parallel scattering. Now, similar story is for 2KF, but 2KF is obviously a one-dimensional process because you can only be on the same line in order to fit into the Fermi surface. Now, this was a picture which you may like or may not like, but it has some consequences in the sense that because only the amplitude at which the total momentum of fermions is near zero works, if you go beyond the perturbation theory and convert these non-elasticities into a Fermi liquid language, what you find is that the full set of parameters which you need to parameterize both the analytic and non-analytic part is much wider. For example, in order to parameterize the analytic part of thermodynamics, you only need to know certain and small number of harmonics of the Landau functions averaged over the Fermi surface. Because the non-analyticities come from special processes which don't preclude any averaging over the Fermi surface, it's either forward scattering or back scattering, then it is a totally different set of the parameters which actually related to the scattering amplitude rather than to the Landau function. And this is the scattering amplitude which is taken at angle pi. Okay? And the prediction which I can make here is that one can find what the specific heat is. And this is in 2D. And so now in 2D, we have an experiment on helium-3 monolayers. And at the same time, you find what the spin susceptibility is. And there are two parameters, the spin symmetric and spin asymmetric, are components of the amplitude at angle pi. They enter both in the spin susceptibility and the specific heat. So measuring the specific heat and the susceptibility at the same time, you would know two more parameters of the Fermi liquid, which is responsible for the non-analytic part. So three times was flushed. 1 minute left. Okay, so that was basically all about thermodynamics. So you have these processes which are responsible for singular behavior. Now, a somewhat unrelated issue is what happens to these forward scattering processes. And I'm not going certainly to go through all the results here, but physics is very simple. If you don't know anything about bosonization or a conformal field theory, and you simply try to do a perturbation theory in 1D, it's obviously going to blow up in your face. Where it's going to blow up? It's going to blow up because a on-shell fermion in 1D can emit an infinite number of soft bosons, which would be the R quanta of charge and density R fluctuations. And that leads to a singularity in the self-energy, which has a pole, which is certainly a bad thing. Now, that doesn't lead to the limitations of the wave functions, but it does lead to spin charge separation. And in 3D, nothing of this kind happens. Well, 2D is a marginal case, and what you have is actually a log singularity in the self-energy on the mass shell at the second order. Okay? If you do a higher orders of the perturbation theory, you find that these singularities are promoted to power laws, you prenormalize your theory, and what you find at the end that everything kind of looks normal, except for the self-energy has a peak as a function of the distance to the mass shell. That's where they are. That's where the singularity in the naive perturbation theory was. And physics of this singularity actually is an attempt to take into account the interaction with the zero sound mode, which is a non-R perturbative effect, at every order of the perturbation theory. So once you do it at infinite order, everything is fine. However, basically, Cherenkov physics determines the presence of a kink in the imaginary part of the self-energy, which is translated into a kink which is the zero sound feature in this metal function. And probably the best R candidate to see this effect would be, well, ARP is certainly one R possibility, but people do very well R controlled experiments on momentum resolved tunneling between layers of the gas in semiconductor architectural structures, which basically simply measures the R convolution of two spectral functions of two-dimensional gases. And we hope that this feature can be seen at some point. Thank you for your attention. Yeah, so, no. So in 1D, even if you have only this and nothing else, only if you have a scattering of right on right, left on left, that's already the reason for the spin charge separation. Okay, so here, in some sense, the singularities are fake, because it simply means that you have to resum the theory, and once you are done, you get back, by and large, your Fermi liquid, which is non-spin charge separated. Well, simple means that you either do our Bosniization or Adlashinsky-Larkin, but it's not just a it's not just an NRPA summation. But what it is just a our 1D light version of this singularity.
This singularity is absent in some of the quantities they were expected from scaling, for instance, in the temperature dependence and sensitivity. Now, from your more detailed analysis of what processes are producing the singularities, can you understand why it would be there in the Q dependence but not be there in the temperature dependence? Or is it still an accident?
I think it's, so it's in 3D. Yeah, so there is no temperature dependence. Now, as far as the temperature dependence goes, it still looks like it is an accident. So the detailed analysis didn't really gain much into this. And why they why the singularities occur in certain subdynamic things and in certain not, well, you know the answer.
Simple answer, there are all singularities some function of dimension. And by crazy reasons,
yeah, d equal to 3 is a special point. Yeah. This is the most benign case. This is the most benign case of a spherical or circular Fermi surface. If you are modify the Fermi surface in a smooth way, say into an ellipsoid or an ellipse, this is all going to survive. If you start to get into if you start to get into inflection points, then these singularities are amplified. But what we're saying is that, well, there's already a one-dimensional physics. Even if everything is circular, make it a little bit more 1D by providing possibilities for nesting, well, then certainly it's going to be even stronger. But even for the circular or spherical case, you already have this.
Reminds one of all these great efforts made in the late 80s, early 90s to find ways to break down the Fermi-Liquid theory, you know, Shankar theorem and the master.
That wasn't my my intention.
All this business within Fermi-Liquid theory of finding directions and not finding leading singularities. I wondered whether it is not related to the fact that in all of this business, one always assumes that the irreducible interactions are regular, and everything is happening in the propagators, which was the fundamental assumption of Landau for the
Fermi-Liquid
theory, and which is continued running through all the.
No, it is certainly done with a much modest purpose, is that you know that you're going to dock with the Fermi liquid. What would be the ramifications of this?
I wonder whether the fact that if you're looking for Fermi liquid theory breaking down into a three dimension, whether in many cases we don't have to look for some reason why the irreducible interaction acquires a singularity, for instance, from the fact that there is some large enough interaction which brings down some low energy mode because the interaction is large enough. And so it would happen above a certain threshold for the interaction.
Right. So
stuff like that. And whether that is what one needs to investigate.
So let me answer in two ways. So first of all, This is indeed a somewhat biased study because you want to study arc reactions to the Fermi liquid. Now, if you want to do something different, suppose that you know that there is a critical point, let's say a Fermionic point. You still want to study arc reactions to Gaussian theory at this point. And that's what Andre and Katrine and Jerome did. That then you don't have Fermi liquid, but you would essentially find that physics of these singular terms survive. They're there, they have the same signs, they only change the functional properties. Now, with respect to the breakdown of the Fermi liquid here, how you can also interpret all these results is in terms of an effective dynamic long-range interaction. So we typically say that, well, we have, let's say, a gas of charged electrons, but the effective interaction is screened, and therefore sufficiently not rapidly falling off the interaction is not going to produce any trouble. The problem is that if you look at dynamic part of the interaction, it has long-range tails. So there are two components of this. There is a long-range tail at finite frequency as a power law, and there is a dynamic Friedel oscillation, which exists at finite frequencies. They are responsible for these nullities, but because they exist only at finite frequencies, and not like gauge interactions, when you integrate all frequencies, all they can produce is this subleading, interesting, but subleading term. If you say that they live at certain frequency, and this frequency is fixed, and they simply have a long-range tail, well, then certainly you can break the Fermi liquid.
It's assumed, of course, that scattering amplitude, which is reducible, but it's fine.
Yeah.
If by any reason the flow gap itself, coefficients that multiply all powers here.
Yeah, I'm saying that seems to be the only loophole.
But you know that they cannot reach this within the perturbation theory.
Often you type, right.
In the context of your non-Lorentzian spectral function, I'm just trying to think how elastic and impurity scattering affects the shape. So normally with
the Lorentzian, you're bad. I mean, it's certainly from finite temperature or elastic scattering is going to smear this down. That's why I am more thinking about tunneling between layers of two-dimensional heterostructures.
Even those where, intrinsic
elastic scattering. Yes, but much weaker than in a let's say layered material. Which is not a two-dimensional heterostructure. The widths of this guy, this kink, if you do it for the Coulomb potential, basically has no specific scale, right? So it's not that one of the tau has to be. So once you make your measurement energy is larger than one of the tau, then it should survive.
Other questions?